Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. I'm Zach Birchie, my guest this week. Everybody knows this guy. He's been on the show before, but we've never done a show with just him, so it was really important to get him back. The author of Manga, The Complete Guide, author of King of RPGs, and a million other things, and not the least of which being House of a Thousand Manga on Anime News Network. It's Jason Thompson. Jason, thanks for coming by.
Done. Thanks, Zach. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you back. So we've never gone into your career, and you're sort of... famous, you're internet famous, I think, for being a huge manga guy. Obviously, that reputation is quite deserved because you did literally write the book on it, Manga The Complete Guide, which is this giant, thick tome that covers, to that point, I believe, every American-released manga, right?
Yeah, it came out in 2007, and I spent pretty much the entire year before that doing nothing but reading manga. I actually quit my job so that I could work on the book and just write about manga. Although, technically, my job before that was working at Viz, so, you know, it wasn't entirely different.
Well, let's start at the beginning. Where'd you get your start? How did you first discover manga? When did you start getting into this?
Well, I started getting into manga in high school, and especially in college. There was an anime club at a University of California at San Diego, Cal Animage Beta, and I started going there, and the... You know, I think the first anime that I actually saw that I knew of as anime was Akira and Ranma 1/2. I mean, I'd seen some translated comics in high school, but basically I got into it from Ranma and from the school love comedy, and then, you know, moved from that into the, you know, the science fiction, horror, and shonen, and, you know, everything else that's out there.
Okay, and so then when did this become sort of a career choice for you?
Well, that was kind of a stroke of luck, because I didn't like set out in college saying like, oh man, I'm going to work in manga. I did a thesis paper on manga, actually. I was taking a class on comics, and that was one of my my final. It was like a, you know, an epic paper on Japanese comics. But I mean, I was an English major and an art minor, but I didn't really think that there was manga could be like a career that I could do, you know, because at the time it was really small. And, you know, although I was aware that like Viz and some other companies were translating manga, it just, you know, to me, almost all the manga that I read at the time was, well, most of the manga that I read was untranslated, and most of the stuff that I saw was fan subbed. So I almost said scanlated. How strange! So I didn't really think of like the manga market as something that you could actually like go into and make money. I thought of it as something that, you know, people were just doing for kicks, you know, like drugs. So, but anyways, after I graduated, I found a job at Viz that was being advertised in An American magazine, and I applied for that job, and lo and behold, through my rugged perseverance, I got it, and I ended up working at Viz back in 1996.
What was the job?
It was as editor of Game On USA, which was a very, very short-lived video game magazine, which Viz did. There was a Japanese game magazine, I believe called Game On, which was published by Shogakukan, Viz's parent company. And Viz was like, Street Fighter, people like it, you know, Night Darkstalkers, you know, play Battle Arena Toshinden, we should like do something with all this gaming manga, which is running in these magazines. You know, like Gamest, which was an excellent video game arcade magazine, which was running in Japan at the time. And, it's kind of the stuff that Udon Entertainment publishes now. And so Viz had the idea that we would do this gaming magazine which combined like gaming manga and, you know, gaming information, you know, from straight from Japan. And this was like the basically during the time of like the Sega Saturn and the first PlayStation. So it was like a sort of micro gaming boom. And, And so I was, you know, I ended up being the editor of this magazine and putting together the gaming coverage. And I actually, wasn't working on the manga itself so much at that time. Because they had other editors there who were already working on the manga, and they were like, no, you concentrate on video games. But I really wanted to work on the manga. So eventually they let me edit this Darkstalkers manga, which unfortunately was not very good, which is the problem with a lot of gaming and generally licensed spinoff manga in general, which unfortunately they did not anticipate when doing the magazine, which is that a lot of it sucks. But there was some really good stuff. I really liked Masahiko Nakahira. And Tsukasa Kotobuki did a Battle Arena Toshinden manga. So there was some good gaming stuff out there, and there still is. But yeah, the gaming magazine did not last very long, because I think in 1996 there was like 10 video game magazine launches, and most of them died horrible fates. But after that, I kind of, you know, landed on my feet, and they let me start working on manga.
Wow, okay. And so your days at Viz, so you spent a good chunk of time at Viz. What did your duties there encompass? I mean, obviously you started out on this and then you went on to manga. You know, tell us a little bit about that trajectory. By the end, what were you working on?
Well, I kind of, you know, after the video game magazine folded, you know, I was pretty bummed, and you know, they let me stay on. They did not execute me for the video game magazine not succeeding, which I was very grateful for. And you know, I basically started working on manga, and I also did some work on their website. At the time, they had a website called jpop.com, which was about, like, you know, Japanese idol singers and just J-pop culture in general. Mm-hmm. And they were doing a book, I think back then, called Japan Edge, which is a really hard to find book now, but it was basically a book about, like, Japanese pop culture, which is written by Carl Gustav Horn and Patrick Macias and a couple other people who didn't go on to become as famous, but since they were getting into Japanese pop culture in general and trying to sort of branch out, and I was kind of involved with that. But they started me working on the manga, which was manga that if they didn't trust me, they could afford me to screw it up, like the Night Warriors manga. And then I think I moved up to Silent Mobius and the Tenchi Muyo manga. And you know, finally I got onto Dragon Ball, you know, which I had been dreaming of for years. And Trish Ledoux actually let me edit Dragon Ball. She had been doing it before, but she was too busy. And so yeah, that was when I was really living the dream, as it were, of actually figuring out how Son Goku's, like, you know, how the punches and sound effects should be translated. Actually figuring out, you know, and then from there on to, like, Shonen Jump, when actually figuring out how Dawn should be translated in One Piece and all of the other important questions.
Wow. Yeah, so those are major decisions.
Yes. You know, it was an interesting time, because back in, like, the late 90s, Viz thought they were doing pretty well, but you know, they didn't really take off until they got the Pokemon license in 1999. And at the time, honestly, I, you know, they're lucky I wasn't running the company, because I was like, oh, Pokemon, whatever. Man, this is just kid stuff. We should be publishing serious manga. This is just some game spinoff. In fact, Pokemon was like, sold like a million copies, and, you know, it was super popular. And it was like the first Viz comic that was sold in Toys R Us, I believe, followed shortly thereafter by Dragon Ball. And basically that totally gave Viz all this cash, and they were doing great. And during Wiz's cash, they were able to publish some really weird stuff, like Pulp Magazine, which had started a couple of years before in 1997. And I was doing, I did manga reviews for Pulp Magazine. I had this manga column, which started out as kind of like just a list of the manga that was coming out from all the different publishers at the time, which wasn't a lot. And then I, like, you know, I started actually reviewing it as I wrote about it. And they let me get away with some amazingly negative reviews of some Viz titles, which, after a time, I was very grateful for. There was a nice editorial and marketing division, which was very nice. And I did some work for Anamerica magazine. But after like 2000, 2001, the Pokemon money started to drop, and Viz was like trying to figure out what to do next. But they were still doing manga that mostly the traditional way, like left to right, flopped, and, like, in, you know, with all the sound effects relettered, which they still do. And you know, it was kind of expensive. And then Tokyopop just basically did a, you know, completely, like, pushed them out of the way and started doing their right-to-left, you know, original manga. And they totally overtook Viz in the matter of about a year. And so Viz was freaking out. And it was at that time that they decided to do Shonen Jump, which was the result of a really, like, which was the result of, like, months and months of licensing and complicated negotiations. And it was going to be called different something else before. It was called Shonen Jump. But yeah, that was really complicated. And that's really when things started getting crazy. And I ended up being the first editor of Shonen Jump because I'd always been bugging my you know, my bosses that we should publish JoJo's Bizarre Adventure and Yu Yu Hakusho and Bastard and stuff like that.
You don't happen to remember what it was going to be called, right?
Well, the thing is, at one point, they wanted to do a Shonen Jump manga, but they didn't want to call it Shonen Jump. Because, first off, there are some people who thought, not the main managers, but there are some people who thought that Shonen was too weird sounding, Shonen Jump was too weird sounding. And I think for licensing reasons, they also weren't sure they wanted it to be the official Shonen Jump, because if it was the official Shonen Jump, then it had to, like, operate under more restrictions. I believe they're going to call it... Do you remember Raijin Magazine?
Yep.
Okay, this is around the same time Raijin was started, and I believe that one of the titles that was floated was Manga Typhoon.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, not quite, you know, not quite Tsunami, but...
And, you know, Super Manga Blast was already taken, so...
Yes, they couldn't do Super Manga Blast. That's what they chose.
Those must have been really hectic days, because, you know, the amount of pressure on Viz at the time to make that succeed must have been enormous.
Well, yeah, it was pretty crazy, and there was a lot of changes in the company and in the corporate structure. I mean, during this time, I mean, when I started Viz, there was, like, less than 20 people. And by the time that Shonen Jump had launched and was at its most successful, there was about 150 people in the company. I mean, it wasn't all just because of Shonen Jump, of course. They were still doing Pokemon DVDs and, you know, Hamtaro and, like, a jillion other things. But Shonen Jump was a big part of that, and it was very epic, you know. It was very epic getting involved with Shueisha, who had always been these, like, intimidatingly awesome, you know, giant manga deities, you know. I mean, Viz had always had a relationship with Shogakukan because they were a branch. Viz was originally, like, a branch of Shogakukan, so they could publish any Shogakukan manga they wanted, pretty much. Like all the Ranma One Half and Takahashi things and But they didn't have a good relationship with Shueisha until they did Shonen Jump. And that was when they basically leveled up and got access to all the good loot, you know?
Okay. That's one way to put it.
They got to, like, get all the good gear, all the, like, you know, all the, like, sweet One Piece, Naruto, Bleach action, you know?
Were you there? I've always heard about this, and I don't know if it's true or not, but was this true that around the time Animerica folded, the management was sort of going through and cutting out the super fans that worked there? It's always been a rumor that floated around that management kind of targeted the people that were super hardcore fans and wanted more of an executive kind of corporate environment.
Well, yeah, that's kind of true. The thing was, there were several different people who worked in Animerica, and, you know, they were all awesome. There was Trish Ledoux, who pretty much started the magazine, and there was her friend Julie Davis, who was, like, the assistant editor, who later became editor-in-chief because Trish got too busy. These were all people who had been, like, doing Animag, this anime fan magazine, way back in the 1980s. They were, like, some of the first Viz people. They were super hardcore. And Carla Horn was also really involved with Animerica. Anyways, the thing about Animerica is... I don't know how much I should say, but basically, as the manga market became more competitive, and, like, Tokyopop started to, like, you know, catching up to Viz and, like, spooking them, they got more restricted in what they could and couldn't say, you know, and what they could say about Viz titles. And so it was a question of, can Animerica be, like, a pseudo... independent magazine, or should it just be, like, you know, a sales sheet for Viz stuff? So that was the I don't know if anyone was specifically targeted, but some people, you know, didn't like the direction the magazine was going, and I didn't like all the directions that Shonen Jump was going either. I mean, just because I don't know. I'm very into manga that is not censored and that is weird, and that if someone is smoking a cigarette, it shouldn't mean that the entire print run has to be scrapped. That's an exaggeration. So some of these things that were being proposed as it got sold to more mainstream channels like Scholastic and Walmart and stuff, it just kind of, just kind of bummed me out. And that was kind of a lame period. And, maybe if I had been a more mature editor, I would have been able to separate my personal feelings about the manga from the fact that, yes, we've got to get this manga out there and make it more popular. But I didn't like all the stuff, all that was having to be done to just to sell copies to more outlets. And so I kind of became disillusioned. And I, around the same time that some of the Animerica people were moving on, I stepped down as editor of Shonen Jump in 2003.
So you never fully made the transition into, I don't care, let's just sell some magazines.
Well, I still worked at Viz until, I still worked at Viz until 2006, and I was still doing freelance work for them up until a couple of years ago. So perhaps I shouldn't be saying any of this.
Oh, it's fine. This is all ancient history.
But anyways.
So you started having sort of your principles were starting to feel as though they were being challenged, and you walked away from Shonen Jump. I would imagine it was a tremendous amount of work anyway. So. You went on to other things. So what did you? So you were still there for another 4 years. What did you work on after Shonen Jump?
Well, I worked on. I mean, I kept working on new manga, and I really wanted to continue editing the Shonen Jump manga, even though it was, there was a little more censorship than I wanted. Since I would ideally want no censorship, but I wanted to not have to be so involved with administrative aspect and the what Yu-Gi-Oh card do we have to have in this issue and stuff like that.
That's not the fun part. Yeah.
Yeah, and also the the censorship was also a factor for me. But I worked less on Shonen Jump, but I started working more on other manga. I got to work on Full Metal Alchemist and Hanakimi and a bunch of titles. And at the same time, I was also working more on my own comics, and I started working on the early draft of what would eventually become King of RPGs, and on some web comics, and a lot of different projects, some of which are still floating around, and others of which are may remain nameless, like my Tokyo Pop Rising Stars of Manga Pitches. rest in peace.
So yeah. Was there a specific moment when you can remember where you spent all this time writing about manga and editing manga and making very crucial choices into how this stuff would be presented to the audience? And for a lot of people, especially in the field that you were and I still am in, where you talk about what other people create for a living. And you eventually come to the realization, or you decide, wait a minute, I have some ideas. I want to make some stuff. Was there a moment like that for you, or had you always wanted to create your own comics, or did it just hit you one day like, I want to make my own stuff?
Well, you're totally right. In fact, I had been making my stuff before. I mean, that's what I studied to do in college. And I also self-published some H.P. Lovecraft comics, back in the 90s, even when I was working at Viz. And those are the ones that I ended up collecting in a graphic novel just recently, actually, The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadas and Other Stories, which is a bunch of H.P. Lovecraft-based stories that are all related. And some of them I did all the way back in, 1999, and others I did just last year. But I had been working on stuff even when I was at Viz, and the Viz people were actually very cool and let me self-publish my own stuff on the side when I wasn't working at Viz, which some companies definitely would not let me do. But basically as my manga workload got higher, I didn't have time to do that anymore. And I kind of fell out of it. And then I was actually in Japan having lunch with, one of the Shueisha editors. I don't remember his name, but they were talking about Shonen Jump, and he was like, He's like, tell me, when you were a boy, did you ever want to work on manga? Did you ever want to draw your own manga? And I was just like, holy crap, I still want to draw my own manga. What the hell? And, so that started planting the seeds of doubt, which would later blossom into King of RPGs and other delightful products. So I wanted to do, I wanted to do certain things. I mean, I've always been into comics, both Western and Japanese. And I've always been into that kind of thing. So I did want to tell my own stories and, do my own stuff. And that's actually one of the main reasons that I left Shonen Jump, was because I wanted to do, I wanted to spend more time working on my own artwork and things like that.
Right. Okay. So eventually you had to make this jump, which, from what I understand, is quite scary. You left a stable job at Viz, or what I would imagine at the time was a stable job, to work on Manga the Complete Guide, as you said. At that point, were you like, okay, I can get this book done and get started on my own projects, or was it, if I don't quit, I am never going to finish this book?
Well, actually, I had to quit Viz to work on Manga the Complete Guide because it was a conflict of interest. I talked to my bosses, and they were actually really cool about it, but I couldn't do a massive book for Del Rey Manga while I was also working at Viz.
Right. So, yeah, that's an issue, yeah.
Although Viz totally was very cooperative and let me read tons of Viz manga for the books and, borrow tons of manga, which lay around my house for about a year. So yeah, I left Viz after exactly 10 years in 2006. And after that, I was still doing freelance work for Viz, I couldn't give up Yu-Gi-Oh!, But I was working on Manga the Complete Guide, and I estimated it out how long it would take, and I figured I needed 9 months to get reviews of about 1,000 titles. I figured that if I did wrote reviews of 3 manga series a day, I could finish everything by the deadline, and I would get the reviews that I that was spillover, like the stuff that I didn't think was important or I didn't want to review so much myself. I knew other people who could review it, like Patrick Macias. He did a bunch of reviews for the book. So I just set off on my manga reviewing year, and I basically became a hikikomori. I basically stayed inside and read manga for 9 months, which, really sounds like a vacation, I assume. So
no, that doesn't sound like a vacation.
No, it was awesome. It was incredible.
Yeah, but you stay inside for 9 months doing anything. It just doesn't sound healthy.
It was a little unhealthy. I did an interview with a Japanese... Patrick actually interviewed me for a Japanese magazine around the time. I think it was Figure O magazine or something. Mm. But that caught me at a low point. I wonder if you can find it on Google. That was in October of September of 2006, and I'd been indoors for 7 or 8 months. I looked like Gollum. I was just, reading manga continually. I think the yaoi was probably the most, insanity making. I really had to look deep inside my soul when I was reading all those DMP yaoi mangas. But reading 30 or 40 volume series is not, it takes a while, even if it's something like Inuyasha, where basically you can just sort of flip through the pages because it's not very dense. There was the other problem that a lot of the series that I had to write about were series that weren't even finished in Japan yet, So what was I to say? Of course I could only review it as based on what, had already come out, And just assume that One Piece wouldn't turn into a philosophical exploration of Jungian archetypes or something like that, later on. It was pretty bizarre. And I ended up working on the book through the middle of 2007 to cram in as much stuff as possible and to get it completely refined so that I wasn't missing anything.
Yowza. So finishing that must have felt like climbing the world's tallest mountain.
It was pretty awesome. I mean, I'm glad I did it. It was a lot of fun. I had to actually, move in the middle of working on the book because the deadline came at my original due date for the tax was the end of November. And at the time, my building that I lived in, the apartment building, got sold to someone else. And they were like, okay, you need to get out of the building by the end of November. But I didn't look for a new apartment because I was too busy working on the book. And I didn't want to miss my deadline. So I'm just like, well, I'm just going to finish the book. And I'm going to load all my books into a U-Haul truck. And I don't know what I'm going to do with them. I got to put them in storage. And they get a couch surf. And that's exactly what I did. I couch surfed for 3 months. And at the same time, however, I was still doing updates to the book, and I was still finished. There was still some stuff that I realized after I turned it in that I hadn't done. I had to do some more reviews, and I had to do the articles that were in the book on like sports manga and stuff like that. So I was doing all this while I was living, and you know, while I was basically living with my friends, couch surfing, and while most of my manga was stuffed inside giant boxes inside a warehouse in San Francisco.
Wow. Okay. sound like some dicey months. So you finished all that, and then you moved on to King of RPGs. That was sort of the next arrow in your quiver, so to speak.
Yeah, that was an idea that I had been thinking about for a while. I actually submitted it to Tokyopop before I even finished Manga the Complete Guide. But the Tokyopop editor, Alexis Kirsch, who actually now works at Viz, looked at it and he was like, well, you know, it's okay, but, you know, it needs this and this. And he mostly said that it wasn't over the top enough. It wasn't like, there wasn't enough a hook. It wasn't enough drama. Because originally it was more of a sort of a, basically King of RPGs is a series about some people who play role-playing games in college. It's a series about gamers. And specifically, it's about one man's quest to become the greatest dungeon master in the world. And that's like the hook. So it's like a shonen manga about role-playing or dungeon mastering, like Bakuman. And originally, it was kind of more like Genshiken. It was kind of like a manga about people who like are in a gaming club and they hang out. And they have their little, like, you know, they have their little love triangles. And, you know, they do gamey stuff. But based on the feedback from the editors that I got, I decided I would make it more melodramatic and like more gar and over the top. And so it started mutating into kind of a very over the top sort of satire. And as opposed to like a sweet story about lovable otaku, it sort of has ended up becoming a story about fanatical gamers and their struggle with society, you know. And their struggle to maintain their sanity and their tenuous grasp on reality as they plunge ever deeper into the world of role playing. If that makes any sense.
Did you personally find that more appealing? I mean, did you ultimately decide? I mean, obviously, that's where it went. But I mean, would you want to go back and tell that other story?
Nah, actually, yeah. I think there's too many stories about nice gamers. I think the characters in King of RPGs are nice. Basically, the main character is Theo, who wants to be the world's greatest dungeon master, and Sheish, who is tragically was addicted to World of Warfare, and developed a split personality, which cannot tell reality from fantasy. And so, whenever he hears the words "my character," he like Yu-Gi-Oh's out. You know, he goes insane, and but deep down, he's just like a struggling nerd. He's trying to keep it together, but in this alter ego, he's like a deranged barbarian. I'm happy with how it turned out, because I think there's way too many stories about nerds and otaku where it's just like, man, they're so sweet and lovable. They just want to be people like everybody else, you know. I think that's kind of boring. I'd rather hear stories about maniacal gamers who are really like weird and like out. I mean, look, I mean, I've been playing, you know. I've been playing video games and role-playing games since I was, you know, a little kid, you know? And, I mean, there was a certain period in my life when I was like, man, I wish people would accept gamers, you know? I wish, you know, people would realize that gamers are normal, just like everybody. And that is kind of true. But I also think that there's something to be said for, like, I think there's something to be said for rebel gamers, you know, for, like, you know, just the weirdness of being an otaku, you know? If, like, otaku as, like, rebels against society, you know, like at the end of a talk in a video in the original Gainax one, you know, that's kind of what I ended up with going forward for King of RPGs. Well, it's more of a celebration of like the mania of being a nerd as opposed to like the like sweet, soft parts of being a nerd. Because it's a shonen manga. Of course, it's a celebration of craziness and mania, you know. Maybe if it was I was doing a like a Yonkoma version, it would be more mellow and easygoing. But
no, I think that's totally accurate. I think there are a lot of stories about how they're eccentric, and you know about the eccentricities, but did you know that they're real people too? And
yeah
we get lots of that. So
of course they're real people. I'm a real person, you know. I mean, okay, to use another metaphor, it's like attitudes towards gay marriage within the homosexual community. Some people are, and probably the majority of people are like, yes, you know, like gay marriage is great. We should, in fact, I think every gay person is like gay marriage is great. But some people are like, yes, gay marriage is something we should really fight for. You know, we should totally, you know, let's like become a fully accepted part of society. But other people, you know, like a smaller group are like, man, yes, we want rights and everything, but marriage, what the hell ever? We don't want it. Why should we, you know, like, go follow, chase after this heteronormative, like, you know, society? Let's just do our own thing and, like, and be, like, you know, let's just do our own thing. And, like, why should we try to act like, you know, everybody else? Let's just be, like, weird and, like, you know, queer and, like, not, you know, and not at all, like, you know, like, straight society. And that is my that's my new graduate thesis that I'm writing on the King of RPGs and how it compares to gay marriage. The end.
Okay. the struggle of what was once considered a subculture being assimilated into normal society.
Exactly.
And the people who resist rather than go willingly into the embracing arms of a heteronormative standard. Yeah,
exactly. Why should role players follow the heteronormative standard? I ask you. I didn't read all the AI for nothing.
So I wanted to ask a few questions about how you feel about manga in general now, because you're certainly a commentator and you certainly read a hell of a lot of it and you comment on it on our website once a week.
Yes.
I'm curious to know, like, first of all, what are you still reading? Are you keeping up with the super long running series that you worked on at Viz? Do you still read, you know, One Piece and, you know, all those others that are still going?
I still read One Piece. I haven't been keeping up with Bleach or Naruto lately because it's not as, you know, I don't love it as much, to be blunt. I mean, I like them, but One Piece is really my favorite of the three. And I mean, I've been following Bakuman and, you know, Zetsubou Sensei, which I worked on. Zetsubou Sensei, that is.
I was going to say, like, for, and it seems like this is true for a lot of people, like, interest in One Piece never hit the same high that it did for Naruto and Bleach, but it has also remained remarkably steady. Like, enthusiasm for that comic hasn't died. People still are excited about it. They're not as, you know, there's no merchandise in Hot Topic or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's remained steady. However, Naruto and Bleach both feel like they are down, down, down. And
yeah.
When was it? I was just sort of curious, in those stories, without spoiling too much, can you pinpoint, like, when you started losing interest?
Well, I think the big, around the big leap forward in Naruto, you know?
Yeah.
The jumping forward after the big fight, and, you know, they're older, and, you know, he continues spinning it on. Bleach, honestly, rather early after he finally defeats all the division captains, and, I don't know. I mean, there's some things in Bleach that are so obviously borrowed from Dragon Ball Z that it's like, if this is like a supposed to be like a parody or like an in joke, it's hilarious. It's great. But if it's like, I mean, but if it's so, if it's just taking it as it is, it's just like, oh man, I've seen this before. And of course, that's the danger of reading a lot of manga, though. You know, you're eventually like, ah, oh, God, you know, like, I've seen this scene where the dude, like, one dude looks like they're about to hit the other, but then someone else hits them when you flip the page. You know, I mean, it's inevitable, and I always struggle not to succumb to, oh God, I've seen it all before. You know, like, blah blah blah. In my day, Shonen manga was great. You know, blah blah blah. You know, crusty old man manga reader sort of thing. You know,
yeah, it's hard not to be jaded. You consume so much, you start noticing the patterns. And once you start noticing them, it's really hard to stop noticing them.
Well, One Piece is super patterny, right? I mean, every, you know, they go to a new valley, they go to a new village, something is fucked up in town, they solve the problem, there's a big party, you know, I mean, but it's, you know, it manages to escalate in an exciting way, and the just visually, it's so great, you know, I just love his art. I mean, yeah, Bleach and Naruto have their, you know, they also have their charms, but I think One Piece is my favorite.
There's a certain thing with One Piece, I think, that makes it better than the others I think it's in the lead characters, where they're indestructible like every shonen superhero is, but he goes out of his way to just beat the tar out of him every time.
Yeah, that's something I love about it.
And that there's something to that where it's like, okay, they really have to fight for this thing they're trying to accomplish. It isn't, you know, well, let me use my super move and this will all be over. You know, there's something to that. But, you know, Naruto, I feel, has really sort of dropped off a cliff in terms of just in fan enthusiasm.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I really am not sure how they're going to... I'm not sure how they're going to keep it going. I mean, and it's really unfortunate because, you know, where Naruto goes, so goes the entire manga and anime industry, you know, because it seems like so many people, I mean, because it seems, unfortunately, that, like, just in the last couple of years, there just hasn't been as much new anime on American television, and there hasn't been a new big shot series, you know, to replace, you know, Bleach and, you know, Naruto. I mean, Death Note, sorta, you know, but it's unfortunate, and I mean, of course, the people are worried about the same thing in Japan. Like, I assume you saw those just transcripts of the conversation between Kentaro Takekuma and Ken Akamatsu about, like, the future of Japanese manga, and how that one of them is, and Takekuma is like, you know, man, it's like, well, the only, you know, if Naruto or Bleach or One Piece ever end, like, circulation is going to collapse. There's not any new manga that are that popular. Maybe we could, like, have like, new artists come in and start working on Naruto and Bleach so that, like, they'll be like Batman and Superman, and it'll never end. It'll just have more different people working on it forever. And I screamed when I saw that, you know. It was such a terrifying idea that I think it would be so lame if they did something like that. Of course, it's just one person's speculation, but it kind of feels like that. Like, there's just, I mean, how long can they possibly keep this going? I'd like it to be us to live in a universe where people are like, where, like, you know, TJ Kubo can finish Bleach and people will be like, and then he can start a new series and people will be like, oh, this is a series by the creator of Bleach, I think I should check this out. Rather than just people not knowing even who wrote Dead Bleach and, you know, just like, rather than, you know, the people just being attached to the property, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I have to admit, part of me is like, yeah, I would really like to see someone else take on Naruto or take on Bleach, and I'd love to see a different artist spin on these giant, iconic characters. That would be kind of cool. Unfortunately, that's kind of all there is in American mainstream comics are.
Yeah.
A different artist is drawing Spider-Man this week. Big fucking deal, you know? Like, that's
retcon everything. Yeah,
yeah. In this issue, Naruto dies, but he's not going to stay that way, you know, that kind of thing.
Introducing four new Narutos. Yeah. Cyborg Naruto. Like, you know, like white Naruto. Black Naruto, you know.
Yeah, I would totally read Black Naruto. But anyway, go on.
But, I don't know. It's weird. But, so, I mean, I think it would be interesting to, like, I want this manga, like, you know, Sacred Cows to, I want him to collapse. I want him to blow up, you know. I like Devilman, you know. I like Gonagai. I like Devilman. But, you know, I don't want him to keep doing new Devilmans. I don't want to see Devilman Baby in 10 years, you know? It's
well, come on now. Who wouldn't want to see Devilman Babies?
Man Baby. Oh, that's pretty cute, actually. Like Muppet Babies?
He'll make your dreams come true, yes.
That'd be great. I take it all back.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm with you, but at the same time, like, the economic structure of the industry does depend on those giant mega hits. And you're right, there hasn't been one in a while. And for these, you know, Bleach is ending, as they say, and there's, you know, there's two left, I guess, and they need another giant hit. That's totally accurate. I mean, the business model is giant hit pays for small stuff.
That is quite true.
So, you know, I mean, as much as I'm sure the creative sort of maverick in you wants to see those blow up and die to make way for the new, I don't think the time is right for a forest fire just yet, you know?
I like your metaphor. So after the forest fire, all the little plants grow up, a little green. The little green shoots shoot out of the like ashen, devastated wastelands. Yeah, like Mr.
Exactly.
Noble.
Exactly. The other thing I really wanted to get your take on was Rumiko Takahashi.
Yes.
So I've been thinking about this myself lately, and is it me or her time is basically over at this point?
I really fear that her time is over. I have to agree with you. I mean, just Inuyasha just dragged on so long. It dragged on so long, and Rinne did not recapture the popularity of Inuyasha.
No.
I mean, Viz was even. It's really sad because Viz was doing something really cool with the simultaneous, digital release of Rinne, you know, for free. But it's not what people want to read. That's not what people want to read. And I just think she's, I don't know, I think she's not as good as she used to be honest. Or maybe she's not, I don't know, maybe I'm just spoiled by Maezana Koku. Her, like, one series that had, like, a really good ending. Maybe I'm waiting for her to do, like, another seinen manga. Although, I didn't like the ending of One Punch Gospel that much.
I don't know how old she is at this point, but Rinne totally felt like, let's recapture the Inuyasha magic and make all that money again. And it totally fell on its face. I don't even know any fans of that.
It's sad. Well, dude, the Shinigami series? Wow, how original. Yeah. You know, I've never seen one of those before. It's terrible.
Do you think she'll ever go back to seinen? I feel like that's kind of the one thing she's got left, is to go back to seinen. Because at this point, if she does another romantic comedy, it's like, all right, bullet to the head.
Well, if she doesn't, she could do a non-supernatural romantic comedy, and she could give that a shot. She could go the Mitsuru Adachi route, like she used to do when she was younger. I don't know. It doesn't have to be a seinen manga.
That's true. It's weird to think about the fact that 10 years ago, Inuyasha was the shit. Like, that was everywhere. It was a huge hit. And now she, and that was coming on the heels of, like, from the creator of Irusa Yatsura and Ranma 1/2 and all these mega hits is the latest mega hit. And now she's nearly irrelevant.
I really just think Inuyasha was too freaking long. I mean, I was really reading it very eagerly when it came out. I was like, oh, man, this is great. This is incredible. The thing about Inuyasha is it has a, here's what it had that, here's, I think, where it went wrong. Because it is a serious series, right? It has comedy elements, but it's not a comedy like Ranma or Urusei Yatsura or Maezana Koku. It's basically a shonen adventure story. But it's not a shonen battle manga. Because I don't even know how freaking strong Inuyasha is. Like, the fight, he's like, maybe, he just basically claws things up. And he has, like, a huge phallic sword, you know? It doesn't, it does not give me the feeling of, like, struggle and effort and training and blah, blah, blah that, like, all the three big Shonen Jump titles, you know, do, you know? I mean, it does not, the fighting is not particularly exciting to me. There's some cool stuff, there's some really cool monsters and stuff, maybe she was just trying to, like, do the right thing and not succumb to the Shonen tournament formula, but the fact that it's just like this endless sort of adventure where it's sort of, you know, I can't, you know, it's just like one weird thing after another and it just goes on forever and ever. It just doesn't, it's just, I don't know. I think it lives too long. You know, you want to like a manga to like die young, you know, die being beautiful instead of like living on to like a senile old manga, you know?
Yeah, that's true for television shows as well. You want them to go out on top, not 10 years later. Yeah.
Yes, I don't know why I'm still watching House, but go on.
You can't for much longer.
Did they Are they canceling?
It's canceled, yeah.
Hell yeah! All right.
It's over. This is it. All right, cool, man. Well, it's good to get your take on that stuff. We got a bunch of Twitter questions for you, so we should go ahead and get to that. But before we do that, clarify, is your project or your Lovecraft project still on Kickstarter?
It's not on Kickstarter. Basically, the Lovecraft project, it made its Kickstarter funds in last year, like at the end of the year, and I've been basically working on getting the book out. It's actually available on my site, mockman.com. It's a 184-page graphic novel adaptation of a bunch of H.P. Lovecraft stories, which I drew myself. And I've also got like some posters and stuff too. My favorite Lovecraft stories actually are the fantasy stories. They're like the Dreamland stories, the like ones that are, which are generally not as well known as like the Cthulhu stories. I mean, they've got, like, evil monsters and, like, dark gods and stuff, too. But, you know, they're more of, like, a fantasy bent. And I kind of think that's cool. I enjoy that weird fantasy adventure aspect, you know? Even if there isn't a pirate ship and like, a stretchy guy involved.
Do you leave in all the weird racism and misogyny?
Well, it's not so much misogyny. I mean, there's misogyny in the sense that women aren't characters in his stories. I mean, he was so shy and indifferent. He was so, like, shy about women and so, like... But the thing is that he expresses his sexism by just not having any women in his stories, as opposed to, like, having them, like... It's not like Conan, where there's, like, always some, like, chick, like, strapped, like, chained to, like, a totem pole, and Conan rescues her, and they make out, you know? It's just, like, he's just not a fan service writer, you know? He just, He's discreet. All the sex in his stories is, like, off-screen, and it involves people having sex with fish monsters and, like, apes and stuff like that, you know? You know, I'm actually working on another Lovecraft thing right now. Have you heard of Hayori and Yarko-san?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm actually going to be writing about that for Crunchyroll when they start streaming the new TV series in April, I believe. So basically, they found me because I am a person whose interests combine H.P. Lovecraft and manga, and it's an extremely nerdy series. So it's perfect.
Really narrow field there that you just happen to be perfect for.
Yeah, they even got references in that show to, like, the 1980s Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. It's very disturbing. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. I have been working on it lately.
All right, cool. Okay. All right, let's go ahead and do Twitter.
Yeah.
Okay, Itoju asks, do you think Mamoru Nagano will ever finish the Five Star Stories manga? Will he stick to his crazy original timeline?
I don't know. Actually, I had Mark Simmons, the world's in my mind, the world's biggest mecha expert, review Five Star Stories for Manga the Complete Guide. So I am not so knowledgeable about Five Star Stories, to be blunt. I've never been so much of a mecha dude. I've always been more of, like, a monsters and love comedy and battle dude. So perhaps I will have to get those and write about it for House of Thousand Manga.
Okay. ABCB Tom wants to know, any theories on why horror manga didn't do better than it did?
I think it did pretty well, honestly. I mean, Viz did really well with Uzumaki. And the other Junji Ito manga. How well can it do? It's kind of a niche, right? I would like to see more people publish horror manga. It's kind of weird to me that we haven't seen more of it. I guess Dark Horse didn't do that great with their Junji Ito reprints, but that was in, like, the bubble period of manga in, like, 2007, 2008 when they were releasing those, so maybe it just got washed off the shelves by the wave of Tokyo Pop titles.
Okay. Krom on the Hill asks, do you know anything about the manga Yasuhiro Imagawa is currently working on?
No.
Okay.
No, I do not.
Easy enough. Land of Obscusion asks, you said having two Rumika Takahashi titles on the House of 1000 manga was an exception, but are there any other exceptions that you'd make?
I've already written a little bit about Fist of the North Star in my Ryzen column, but I will be writing more about Fist of the North Star. And my brain's trying to sort through all that. And I'll be writing about more Ryoichi Ikigami titles and Kazuo Koike titles as well. So yeah, there's definitely writers that I'm not just going to cherry pick one series from any given writer. I reserve the option to write about whatever the hell I want. So I'll probably write more about some authors that we've already talked about.
Oh, we should mention that the scope of House of 1000 Manga is going to widen over this year. You're planning on covering a wider array of stuff, not just stuff that, you know, is sort of buried or lost or forgotten or obscure, that kind
of
thing.
Yeah, I'm going to keep covering obscure manga, but I'll also be covering more current manga, like I did with the feature on cooking manga a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. All right. Ben the Bear wants to know, besides the ones you mentioned in your last article, what are some of your favorite GoGo 13 kills and stories?
Oh, man. Well, I love the Dungeons & Dragons one, of course. That is, you know, the GoGo board game. And I love the Saddam Hussein one. My favorites really are the Viz ones. I think Carl did a great job picking them out.
Okay. Big on Anime asks, what do you think of Viz Media's business practices, i.e. canceling a series a few volumes early and having certain random volumes go out of print when the series itself is still in print?
Well, they're a company. They're a big company. The manga market is hard. I think it sucks when... I mean, it definitely sucks when certain volumes are out of print, and it's... You know, and it sucks when a series is canceled before it's finished. I mean, I was so glad that Viz was able to publish all of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Stardust Crusaders. But it's basically just economics. I mean, it's unfortunate, but it happens. Almost every manga company has gone that way, you know, at some point and canceled something. It's a cruel dog eat dog manga world we live in.
Okay. Nialcolus Cage wants to know, so J Manga is now available worldwide, which I heartily welcome. My question is, what changed as far as rights go that allows that to happen now?
Well, I believe that actually individual titles are still region blocked. It's just the entire site is not region blocked. It's not quite as big of a deal as they had made it out to be. I assume that they actually have to renegotiate every contract for every manga, you know, to get themselves the rights. I think it's still evolving.
Jacob YBM asks, you once tried to get DC and Shueisha to team up on a Dragon Ball Superman crossover, but Shueisha shot it down due to only Toriyama being allowed to write Dragon Ball. Since then, several miniseries have been done by Oishi Naho. You think it's time for a retry?
Man, it could be, but it won't be me involved. I don't work at Viz anymore. But definitely, someone should push it out there. I think that would be excellent.
All right. Getting through these quick. Jack Mace Rio asks, the manga industry is rather successful in international markets, yet the creative decisions are still rather insular towards it. Why?
Well, the vast majority of manga sales, I think, are still, you know, at home in Japan. I mean, although they do think about some things in the international market and will also censor things for the international market, like, you know, the cross in Death Note versus the manga and the anime, they're still basically aimed at a Japanese audience, which is why you see so many damn maid cafes. And I think it's unfortunate because of how it relates to, you know, digital rights and the fact that, they still imagine that they can license, these foreign editions country by country. And, this is one of the reasons that Scanlation is so huge. I mean, even huger than just pirated PDFs of American comics are in America. I assume there's a lot of disagreement in their corporate level of how to handle things, and I assume that they don't want to do anything that would cut off their main source, which is the Japanese market and the Japanese books. So they're probably really wary of doing anything that would that would drain sales away from that. I mean, the American manga market is big, or has been big, but it's still nothing compared to the market in Japan. So they aren't really making decisions with us in mind. You know, it's just a little icing on the cake.
Okay, kind of a long question from V Guy with regards to doujinshi. He says he realizes that in Japan, doujinshi spin-offs of major franchises are more quote-unquote mainstream than they are in America, and he's run into people who insisted that Evangelion doujinshi be mentioned alongside officially licensed spin-offs because it's really well-known or popular or whatever, and he wants to know what your approach is to that. Should alternate universe professionally produced spin-offs like doujinshi be included alongside official spin-off materials in something like a manga encyclopedia? So in other words, do you ever feel like someone cataloging something should reference or acknowledge doujinshi material when talking about the actual official story or, you know, things that are officially licensed?
Well, I don't have a moral thing against it. I mean, if there's a good doujinshi out there, you know, I wouldn't feel any hesitation about mentioning it. But you still got to draw a line between what is the like officially approved version and what's not. I mean, if it doesn't matter how great your Game of Thrones fanfic is, if it's not like written by George R. R. Martin, then who cares? It may be great, but I mean, it's still not official, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, I don't really talk too much about doujin because they don't even. I mean, in some cases, of course, artists may come out of doujin who go on to do professional work, and some doujin definitely has professional production values. I mean, I would really it would be great if we could see more of it translated. Actually, some of the original doujins, especially, but it's just not. Unless you actually have a specific case where, like, you know, Hideki Anno is like, whoa, I read this Evangelion doujinshi, it was so great, I'm going to use this idea in the Evangelion reboot, then there's not really any need to cover it, you know? I mean, I don't think you should be like, how dare you mention the doujinshi, that blasphemous, unwholesome, false manga, but it's just not, it's not the same thing, you know, the creators, what the stuff that's created by the original creator is, you know, real, and everything else is like, you know, everything else is fanfic, you know, that's just the way it is. I mean, even with H.P. Lovecraft, you know, I mean, the stuff that H.P. Lovecraft wrote is like, you know, that's the gospel, dude. Everything else is like, it might be really cool, but I still gotta draw a line.
Yeah. I think doujinshi, it's best to recognize it, or the way to recognize that is when it's a fun fact about someone's career, where
exactly.
they're professionally working mangaka now, and hey, they used to draw Cardcaptor Sakura doujinshi back in the late 90s, you know, that's a fun fact.
Oh, yeah.
That's a fun fact, but it's not, like, we don't need to catalog every instance of doujinshi being created alongside the original. I think that's just, it's not only asking too much. I mean, that's a really OCD thing to do, and would be really tough.
It's possible.
Yeah, it'd be really, really tough.
You know?
I mean, if there's a guy out there who owns every single piece of Evangelion doujinshi, he has a very large house.
It's really basically almost impossible to sort that kind of stuff out. I mean, I'm not saying it's not fun to try, but I mean, what do you count? Like, do you only count professionally printed doujinshi? What if it's like somebody's Evangelion webcomic? You know, what if it's, you know, what if it's like, does it matter if it's by a Japanese person or if it's by like, you know, an American or Korean? It's just, you know,
yeah, it's too much of a pain in the ass.
Hey, you know what I've been reading lately that I really like? I've been reading Ippongi Bang's manga and Comic Loud. Did I ever tell you about that?
I don't think so.
I like Ippongi Bang. Apparently a different author, maybe an underground comics artist.
Yeah,
I like Ippongi Bang a lot, and I wrote one of my early House of Thousand mangas about her, and she's got like a new series now in Comic Loud, which is this like Kindle manga magazine, which is kind of interesting. But it's just you know, it's cool stuff, and she talks a bit about doujinshi and just being like a low-level manga artist. Mid-level, of course. So, sorry, but I'm interrupting the questions.
No, it's fine. Okay, Asandra asks, any news on King of RPGs Volume 3? Is it going to be a collection of the webcomics or a big story like the first two volumes?
Well, it will not be a collection of the webcomics. We actually do have something planned, and I'm talking to Victor right now, all I can say is to please keep an eye out on kingofrpgs.com as we continue doing the webcomic Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and we will soon have we may soon have some announcements relating to King of RPGs Volume 3. But till then, just like us on Facebook and check out the comic.
Okay. All right. Alphonse 0079 asks, any predictions of which direction Hirohiko Araki's art style might go next?
Oh my God. I love his art style. I do not, like, how could I predict? I mean, which way a flower will grow, or like, you know, whether the wind will blow a blade of grass, you know, and what, I don't know. I mean, I'll be looking forward to it, whatever it is.
That's a very poetic answer. okay, to follow that up, he wants to know which column on House of 1000 Manga did you receive the most interesting feedback for? Any major surprises?
I liked some of the discussion when I reviewed the Jesus manga. This is kind of interesting. Any surprises? Well, I mean, one of the nicest things is when I'm able to find different manga artists on Twitter and stuff like that I didn't really, you know, didn't know that they had like a website out there. Sometimes people will pop up and you know, and be like, oh, did you know they're doing this? You know, they're not dead now. Like when I found out when I reviewed Gojin, which is like one of the most obscure things imaginable, and then suddenly I find out it's the same dude who did Ninja Attack, the illustrations for that book. Was it called Ninja Attack? Dang, I don't remember. I found that this guy did this book, obscure book, like 20 years ago for Antarctic Press, is still doing manga today, and you know, his art looks really nice, looks better actually. There's a lot of little surprises like that. You know, it's more interesting. I mean, that stuff is more interesting than like just arguing with people over like whether Saint Seiya is Saint Seiya is popular in America or not. Because you meant North America. You should have meant included Latin America.
Yeah,
you know, you know, I love it when people, you know, give me feedback in the forums, and I always try to check it out and answer, unless it's something which totally blows my mind and I can't comprehend.
Okay. Shikero wants to know, his new iPad coming out has twice the resolution of the old one, 720p display. Do you think more people will come on board for digital manga with a higher resolution like that?
Well, I think so. Although, honestly, I don't really have a problem with the existing iPad resolution for manga. The Viz manga app, you know, I think it's pretty good quality. And I actually really enjoyed the app for number 5 that they released as a standalone a while ago. I think the iPad and the other current pad tablet devices, I think they're great for manga. It does like make me wonder, you know, I mean, pretty much it's hard. There's not that many webcomics out there that are being produced in black and white, but all this manga is all this black and white art, which is being ported onto the internet, you know? I wonder if there would be a bigger audience. I wonder if people are going to start colorizing manga again, like they did in the 90s. I don't know.
It's interesting.
I think the iPad is totally sweet for manga. I certainly hate reading manga on the iPhone. It's such a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Especially when they chop it up so that it's panel by panel. I'd much rather look at a giant JPEG and have to like zoom in on it individually than read like some dumbass panel breakdown. Although the way Comixology does it with the where it actually moves around on the page, that's all right.
Okay, last question. I think this is particularly apropos because I think it's the most common question we get on House of 1000 Manga. And Sally Jenkins wants to know if you have any advice on tracking down out-of-print, hard-to-find manga.
Well, my favorite site is alibris.com. That site is definitely the best all-used book site that I know of. I mean, it has a much better selection. I mean, well, it's a website, of course. It's much easier for me to find manga there than to go to, like, the Kinokuniya in Seattle. eBay can also be really good. I've, you know, bought some manga on eBay. But I usually, between Alibris and eBay, I can pretty much find anything. Now, there are some, now for the really, really obscure stuff that was published in monthly comic format, I haven't actually been to their site in a while, but I used to buy a lot of that on milehighcomics.com, which had the best selection of manga back issues I could find. So between, those are the three sites that I use. Unfortunately, I don't live near a book off, or I'd go there all the time.
I would imagine you tend to stay away from the crazy reseller prices on, like, Amazon.
Well, some of them are okay because some of the resellers are all right, but I think Alibris, you know, I bought Bringing Home the Sushi, which I had, you know, I had it at Viz, but I lost it. I bought that for 99 cents, you know. I mean, there's all kinds of weird stuff floating out there. Of course, if you're collecting like in a 30 or 20 volume series, it's still going to get expensive, but such is life. Such is the problem of liking manga.
All right, man. Well, you keep at it. And thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us. It was a good time.
Hey, thanks, Zach. Anytime.
Okay, everybody, that's our show. Big thanks to Jason for stopping on by. The theme song is called Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at thenewdivision.net. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a little rating or review while you're there. We'd appreciate it. And we will see you all next week.